alcoholic. Thank you, Billy, for asking me to come. When I first came into it, I will say it is definitely, I used to hear people say it's an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak, and I used to say, yeah, right. You know, that's no way. And I think I was probably about 2 or 3 months sober, and I got a call from one of the women in our home group, and they said, I want you to speak for 10 minutes. Can you speak for 10 minutes on the seventh tradition? I was like, what's the seventh tradition? I had no clue what it even was. And I said, well, I don't know. I think I have to talk to my sponsor first, because I did not want to speak in front of anybody. I did not want to get up. She said, well, I've already talked to your sponsor, and she said it would be fine. So I got really mad, and my sponsor told me, she said, Blair, it is an honor and a privilege when someone asks you to speak. And today I can honestly say that it is an honor and a privilege, because the person that I was before I came in this program, I had a disgusting past. I had the lowest self-esteem in the world, and why would anybody want to hear what I have to say? And I'm so grateful that people do want to hear me and want to hear what I have to say. My sobriety date is March 5th, 2005. I am sponsored. She's sponsored, and so on and so forth. And my home group is Jaywalkers in Bon Air. We meet on Tuesday nights for a 2 10-minute speakers, and then the main speakers at 8 o'clock. And then on Friday nights, we meet from 7 to 9. The 7 o'clock meeting is a beginner's meeting, and then the 8 to 9 is open discussion. Okay. I'll start off. My family, immediate family, there's alcoholism. And grandparents on both sides, there's alcoholism, aunts, uncles, alcoholism. So for me to be an alcoholic, that's not abnormal. I think I had a good childhood. I'm really not sure. I used to want to believe that I had a really bad childhood, that my parents mistreated me, that they were horrible people, and I used to wish that they would get divorced. I used to pray, why can't my parents get divorced? Everybody else's parents are getting divorced, and you know, because I wanted to be spoiled, and I wanted to get my way, and I knew that with both parents together, there was a chance I wasn't going to get my way with anything. Anyhow, looking on the beta tapes back from the 80s, I had that transferred onto DVD a few months ago, and I was watching it, and to say that my childhood was bad would be a lie. My parents spoiled me financially. They spoiled me with things, and I was a brat. Looking at the videotape, I was the biggest brat in the world, and I don't know how two parents would even want me. They probably wanted to give me up for adoption. Anyhow, I don't know what happened. Everything, I seemed to be fearless and wild and rambunctious. And then fourth grade, I don't know what happened, but when I went to school that year, I became extremely shy. They were the same people that I went to elementary school with or primary school. And all of a sudden, I was afraid to talk to any of them. And I don't know what happened, but I was scared to death. I was didn't speak to people. When they talked to me, I looked down. I couldn't look at them in the face. And I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I hated it. I absolutely hated feeling that way. I developed a very low self-esteem at fourth grade. I just thought that I was, you know, I flunked out. I was just making straight F's even in fourth grade. Couldn't pass anything, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. And my brother, which he's a part of my story, he was getting into a lot of trouble. We lived in New Kent, and New Kent's way out in the country, and it's away from places of rich, you know, like Richmond. I'd never been to a real mall. I think Holland Springs had Eastgate Mall, and that was the only mall I'd ever seen, and they had Kmart and Sears. And so he was getting in a lot of trouble at school, principal's office every day, so my parents decided that we needed to go to private schools. I did not want to go. I did not want to switch schools. I was even more afraid then. We'd have to wear uniforms, and these people are not going to like me. And I hated my brother from that day on. Absolutely. I blamed him for having my change of lifestyle. So I ended up going to a private Catholic school. For fifth grade, I started there. it was a big change. The girls there were very well to do. They were coming to school with their little gym bags that had Gap and Limited, and I was like, what is that? I'd never even heard of those stores. I didn't know what they were, and they started immediately teasing me. From fifth grade through eighth grade, they tormented me. They would write me letters and say, you're ugly, you'll never fit in, you're a geek, you're a dork, stop trying to be our friends, we don't like you. And this went on and spreading rumors, nasty rumors. I didn't even know what incest was, but that was one of the rumors that they spread about me and my brother. It was awful. And I was too ashamed to tell my parents that I was not popular. I wanted my parents to think that everybody liked me, and I was too embarrassed to go home and say, this is what these kids are doing to me, please remove me from it. Instead, I wanted them to think I was popular. So when they'd come to pick me up from school in the grocery go-getter, while the other kids have nice vehicles, they'd pick me up and I would go stand next to the popular crowd and put a smile on my face and pretend like they were my friends and get in the car. And it was very difficult, and I hated my brother even more. I mean, the name calling, we'd fist fight, it was awful. So I did that fifth through eighth grade. When I got to high school, I flunked out of private school on purpose. I made sure that I made straight F's so that I wouldn't, it wasn't straight F's, but it was close enough to straight F's, because I didn't want to go to St. Gertrude's. I did not want to go to private schools ever again. I wanted to be in a public school. And in eighth grade, we had actually moved from New Kent to the West End. In that time, I had met people in my neighborhood that were smoking cigarettes my age, drinking beer, and I wanted to fit in immediately. I wanted, these guys were cute, they were good looking, and I was like, wow, and they didn't treat me the way that those girls did in that school, or the boys, and it was the first time I'd ever gotten attention from a boy that was real. I need to back up. This is one thing that shot me from my scene with boys, and it kind of, in middle school, in the private school, I was in sixth grade, and there was a boy there that was in eighth grade. He was very popular. Basketball player, baseball player, very popular, and he started calling me, and he became my boyfriend. But he said we had to keep it a secret because he didn't want anyone to know that he was dating a sixth grader. And about 3 months, I was head over heels for him, obsessed, psychotically obsessed with this man, and it ended up being a big joke, ha-ha. And the whole school was in on it, and it was very embarrassing. So I was afraid of men, that they were going to all do this to me. Anyhow, I moved to the West End and immediately got in with this wild crowd in my neighborhood. And to me, it made all the sense in the world that this is where I was supposed to be. And I drank beer and smoked cigarettes in the eighth grade. By that time, I was still in the private school. I got mugshot pictures taken and got house arrest and community service in the eighth grade for unlawful trespassing someone in the neighborhood. Her little sister was asked to keep the dogs and the cats, and so we took the keys and had a party. I don't remember getting drunk that year, eighth grade. I think I was scared to get drunk. Alcohol always amused me. Being a Catholic, I loved going up for communion. I would chug the wine. I was very interested in alcohol. My dad drank beer and liquor every single day, come home from work with the beer, so it always amused me. I never looked at it as a bad thing, and but I was scared to get drunk. And then so by ninth grade, I'm going to this public school, and I was like, wow, this is freedom. I was still very insecure, very shy, but I managed to find a group of people just like me, and we were the wild crowd. I dated one of the most popular boys in high school, but he wasn't popular because he was smart and educated and was one of the jocks. He was popular because people feared him. He ended up in federal prison. I mean, this people feared him and his family. But to me, that was cool, and that's what I needed to do. The first time I got drunk, it was in ninth grade, and I remember I felt so free, and I was just wild, and I was out of that shell. I was no longer insecure. All my worries went away, and I was the most popular girl that night. And I was the most popular girl because I played strip poker, and somehow I lost. And that's how I became the most popular girl that night. And other things happened that night that I was not proud of. And So the next morning, I was doing the walk of shame through my neighborhood because the party was in the neighborhood. And so everybody, these were seniors, and I was a freshman. And so as I'm walking over to my best friend's house with the walk of shame, and I can't believe I did this, please, I wish this was all a dream, which I knew it wasn't a dream. And the guys were kind of making fun of me as I'm walking across the street and singing the Sanford and Son song because they said that's how I walked. Anyway, so they say that's what happened that night to me. I didn't care. I cared as far as the embarrassment, but I wanted to feel that magic again. I wanted to feel that popular, you know, just, I'm a very shy person. I wouldn't hurt a flea. I would never harm anyone soberly. I would not hurt a flea. I'm the nicest person you'd ever meet, but when alcohol hit my system, the 110-pound girl got crazy, and I was wild, and I had no fear in me, and I would fight anybody. I didn't care. It did not bother me, and I loved that feeling, and I got drunk immediately again, not even a week later. I wanted to get drunk again. I wanted that feeling. I ended up going over to a friend of ours' house, and she said, let's go over to these guys' house. They're older. They can buy us alcohol. So we went over there, and I ended up in the hospital getting my pummick stumped that night. And did I say my pummick stumped? My stomach pumped that night. And I went home to my parents. I got dropped off. This guy dropped me off, and I was throwing up. And that was my first experience with blackouts. I did not know what was happening to me. I know I'd wake up at one point and I was in the bathtub, and then I'd wake up another point and I was downstairs and then upstairs. Then I was in a car, and then I was on the ground in front of my parents' house. And the next time I woke up, it was with the doctor talking to me. And he said, had you drank anymore or had you have not gotten here? And I was 14 at this time. Had you have not gotten here, when you did, you would be dead. You would be dead. And the only thing I could think of, and my mom made a comment to me when I got home from the hospital. She said, would you care for some more tequila? Because that's what I was doing with the tequila slammers. And it made me sick thinking about tequila. So my first thought was, wow, I could never drink tequila again. I've got to find something else that's going to suit me. And it did not dawn on me that there's any problems with alcohol. Two bad consequences. The first two real drunks. There was no thought that alcohol did this to me. From that day on, most of my drunks were blackout drunks. My parents kicked me out when I was 15, I believe I was 15. They kicked me out. They said that they didn't know what to do with me because I was so out of control. I was sneaking out every night. I was not coming home. I lived house to house, and as soon as people started sniffing that this wasn't a sweet little girl, when they started realizing that she's really this worthless, she's using us, the families would, I'd get the vibe that they were getting ready to kick me out, so I'd pack my stuff and go to the next place. And I lived through high school, and I don't know how people, when they come up here and they say that they graduated high school and they went to college, it makes no sense to me, because I couldn't go to school. I tried my hardest. I would get up, and I would go to school, and I'd sit in the homeroom class, because you have homeroom first, and then I would leave, because I had to go get more drinks. I had to be drinking to feel, I wanted to feel that freeness, and at school I didn't feel it anymore. I was skipping school all the time. At 16, I ended up in Westbrook. The school called my parents and suggested it be a good idea. The high school sweetheart had dumped me, cheated on me with the girl that I was living with at the time, and I thought that suicide was the only answer. And so I was going to try to jump out in front of a car, and the guy that was with me pulled me back, and I ended up in Westbrook, and the school had something to do with that. When I went to Westbrook, that was my first experience with an AA meeting. I had no clue. I went in there, did not listen to a word those people said. The only reason why I'd go to these AA meetings, I don't know if we were required to go, but I knew it was a way to get out of that room we had to sit in all the time. So I never listened to a word they said. They were a bunch of old farts, and I didn't want anything that they didn't want to even know. So I continued to live house to house, hotels, my car. And let me tell you how I got a car. Got into a car accident with a girlfriend of mine. Was not hurt at all. Lied. Said it hurt. Went through physical therapy to get a car. that first car I got, I got like some Mustang. It was nothing. It wasn't a fancy Mustang. It was an older Mustang. And I got that, and I was like, wow, now I have a car. And I totaled it 4 days later, and I was on my way to drink and drug. And drugs are a part of my story, but I was never addicted to drugs. I could throw them down and not even think twice about them. Alcohol was my, I loved alcohol. And so I totaled that car, and because I'd only had it for 4 days, and actually it wasn't my fault, I got money back. And so I was able to get another car. I slept in that car. I lived with different families. I had a family take me in, bought me brand new school clothes, $800 worth of clothes, said that I was, you know, going to be their daughter, and they really tried to love me and give me a good home and teach me good values. They found out that I was skipping school, and I refused to go to work. I wasn't doing anything. I was coming back home after they'd go to work and go back to sleep. And they found out about it, and before they could get home to talk to me, I packed my stuff and left and never saw them again. No thank you, no nothing, because that's the type of person that I am. That's what I was. I was selfish, self-centered, horrible. And at that time, it made sense to me, everything that I was doing. Living on the streets, hanging around with people that were a lot older than me, a lot of bad things happened. I ended up in the hospital again. I used to go to the doctors all the time because I had splotches on my skin and I didn't know what was wrong with me, but it was alcohol poisoning that I was having. And anyhow, I went to the hospital this time as well. Cops escorted me, all upset because I didn't know what had happened to me. I had no clue who, what, when, where, nothing. I woke up in a project ghetto place and being chased out of the house with no clothes on because I didn't know what had happened, and I went off. Anyway, when I went to the hospital, the doctor, of course, my mom is called to the hospital, and she's like, oh, you disgust me. You know, she was so embarrassed. It was just humiliating for her. And the doctor told me that I could have been beat upside the head with a baseball bat that night, and I never would have known. So once again, I blamed it on the type of beer I was drinking that night. I won't drink that kind of beer ever again. And that was always what I did. I was queen of switching the alcohol, whether it be liquor or beer or whatever it was. I switched up because that was the problem. It was not me. And at the age of 18, I was tired. I was worn out. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but it was my life. It was the fact that I had parents who didn't want me. They kicked me out. They didn't love me. You know, my brother and I hated each other, and the boyfriends, they always just used me. They never liked me. They'd go out with me. They'd see me get drunk is the truth of it, and they'd dump me because this pretty girl was really a nasty, ugly person. And so I called the same girl I got in trouble with back in eighth grade. Her parents had moved to Georgia, to Atlanta. So I had found their number. I got in touch with them, and I said, please, you've got to help me. Nobody wants me here, and, you know, something's wrong, and I need help. But I don't, you know, I'm just depressed, and I'm going to commit suicide if you don't let me come move there. And that was my way of moving there. So I took a bus to Georgia, moved in with this family, and they're an alcoholic family, big time, and moved in with them, got a job. And at this job, I didn't want people to know. I was so ashamed of the person that I was that when I moved there, I put on this big act that I was this virgin, sweet, innocent, Christian, Catholic girl, and that, you know, the boys really respected me at this job. It was a lot of men there, and they were afraid to ask me out because they knew I was so innocent and sweet. And I put on this act. Well, I ended up moving out of there and with a lady that I worked with, and I got a job at a nightclub there, Hairston's Nightclub, and I was working under the table. I was 18. I was not old enough to work in a nightclub. I was the coat check girl. The girls hated me there because I made more money in tips than they did busting their butts all night when I just stood there and looked cute with their jackets. My money I would probably make from Thursday through Sunday is all I worked, and I'd bring home at least $500 in that weekend. Where it went, could not tell you. The amount of alcohol in me, when I drink with everyone, which means I pay for everyone because I want them to drink just like me. And so the blackout started again. I was going to church, still Catholic at the time, and I was going to church with the lady I was living with. And one night I went out got really, really drunk. The girl that was supposed to take me home, I left her there and left with some people that I had met that night. And she ended up in a hit-and-run accident. And when I got home that night and I got in the bed, I saw the Grim Reaper. And I will tell you to this day, that's exactly what it was. And I don't care how drunk I was, but I pinched the blood off of my skin. And it was telling me to come. And I don't know if that was my guilty conscience for all of my behaviors, but it was telling me to come. And I remember I closed my eyes, put my head underneath the blanket, and said, God, please, please, I promise, I'll behave. I'll do whatever. You know, I just don't let him take me to hell, you know. And being raised as a Catholic, when you do wrong, basically the way that I believed is I was going to hell. That was my God, the punishing God who did not love me. The next morning I went to church, and the priest, as he's walking down at the end, he's doing that thing where they slap that stuff on you. And he looked dead at me, stopped, and sprayed it right on me. Like, he knew that I was this bad girl. And I was like, I'm going to hell. This is it. I'm done. You know, and what do? Is I go drink it off. I keep drinking. And I moved back to Richmond because I was homesick, really, really homesick. And my mom was disappointed that I was coming home. Because what I would do when I'd come to visit is I would buy her things with that money. I'd have enough money to buy her gifts and tell her how great life is. And I gained a lot of weight. I was up to like 125. I was very healthy. And she said, I finally have my daughter back. But what she didn't know is that her daughter was still the bad girl. And I moved home, and within a week, I was out running the streets, kicked out of my parents' house once again, running the streets, obnoxious, wild, same old story. I ended up, I was at a point where I was drinking literally from the time I woke up in the morning till the time at 2 o'clock in the morning when the guys would all pass out. And I say guys because no girls wanted to hang around with me. I didn't have any girlfriends anymore. The girlfriends I had all told me, Blair, you know, you're too much. We can't. And, they didn't want to hang out with me anymore. So the guys, and I thought I was cool because they called me their Ace Boone Coon, and I took that as a compliment because they said no other girl could drink like I could drink. And so therefore I was popular. And I was drinking from the time I woke up until the time I passed out. I went to a girl's house that I had used to live with and said, can I please just take a shower? And she said, sure. And then I said, well, can I take a nap? And she said, not in my bed. And I said, why? She said, you stink. I said, what do you mean I stink? I just took a shower. She's like, no, Blair, you smell like one of those homeless men on the street. Your body reeks, and you stink, and you cannot sleep in my bed. So, of course, my reaction is, I don't like you either. So I got my stuff and left. No thank you for the shower. No nothing. This girl's crazy. There's something wrong with her. Drugs became a major part as far as the drinking and drugging of my life at that point. My best friend had gotten murdered. She and I grew up in New Kent together in Pampers. She was a good girl. Elvis Presley was her idol at 19. Christian, strong Christian girl. And she was given someone a ride home from work and got murdered. And the type of person that I am, how selfish and inconsiderate, I went to her funeral, and that night I got drunk and went to her parents' house in the middle of the night telling them I was going to commit suicide because I couldn't handle the fact that Rebecca was gone. And that was awful for me to do to her parents and worry them after they just buried their daughter. And but that's the type, and I didn't see anything wrong with that. That was perfectly normal. At this, about a month before that, though, I will tell you, a month before that, I had moved in with another boy and his family, and they were in AA. His parents were both in AA, and when they met me, one of them stuck a mirror in my face and tried to force me to look at myself in the mirror. I started crying. I did not want to look at myself in the mirror. I could not look at myself in the mirror. And they suggested that I go to an AA meeting with them, which was being held at Westbrook. And I was like, well, I'll go because these people are letting me live with them, and if I get on their good side, they'll let me stay for a while. So let me just pretend like, you know, I might have a problem. And I knew I did not have a problem. So I went to the AA meeting, didn't listen to a word, picked up a white chip, didn't even know what the white chip was for, but I did it because his parents told us to. Well, his father ended up committing suicide, and it was an alcoholic death. It was through alcohol and drugs. He ended up committing suicide while I was living there. I ended up getting a DUI at 19, 95 miles per hour, and my excuse to the cop was I was just checking to see how fast my new car could go, because by the way, I did buy a new car. I lied. I went in there with a short skirt and a tank top, flirted with the salesman, got me a new car with no money down, no cosigner, no nothing, walked out with the car. That got repossessed months later after hiding it for a long time. I never paid for it. So that was my excuse to the cop. The cop, however, decided to drive me around Richmond to let me sober up before I went to the station so that I could get out on my own signature. And I did that. So I went to court, and in the meantime, during all that, when the court happened, that's when the dad had committed suicide. I got the DUI before he committed suicide. The dad had committed suicide. Rebecca had gotten killed. So the judge felt sorry for me because both times I was supposed to show up for court, I was at a funeral, both times. And by then, I'm pregnant, and my belly's sticking out. And I got pregnant, and it was a drunken situation of how I got pregnant. I tried to keep my pregnancy a secret from my parents, but all of a sudden I magically wanted to move home after living off of Oreo cookies in a one-bedroom apartment with 9 people with roaches everywhere, and I was eating Oreo cookies and pregnant. I asked my parents, I said, I want to come home. I'll get a job. I got a job immediately. The first time I'd ever kept a job. I used to work through high school, but it was until I got a paycheck to drink, then I'd quit, blah, blah, blah. So I got a job. I started walking to and from work every day because I knew that I wanted to have this baby, and I did not want to be a bad mom. Somehow my parents, a girlfriend, called and told on me and told my parents I was pregnant. My dad called my work and demanded me to walk home immediately. And that was the scariest walk home I'd ever had. I was 20, getting ready to turn 20, pregnant, no clue of anything. And he beat me, and he told me that I was going to have an abortion because there was no way that I was a piece of shit, excuse me, but that's what I was, and that there was no way I could raise a child in the way that I was. So I lied and told him I would have an abortion and told him that I was calling, and I called the abortion clinic right in front of him, made him happy, never had that abortion. So when mom and dad see that I'm really pregnant and that I didn't have that abortion, it was really ugly. My parents, strong, my mom, strong Catholic, she was ashamed. They were both embarrassed, but I did go to work every day. Every single day I walked to and from work. I asked the doctor about drinking. Can I drink? Am I allowed to drink? And he said a glass of wine a day or a drink, you know, you can do that. So the way that I took it is, okay, I'll save it up, and at the end of the week I can have 7 drinks, so at least I get a good buzz. And that's what I did while I was pregnant, up until probably 6 or 7 months pregnant. I had a little boy, and he was healthy. He is healthy. Wow. You would think that somebody's life would change when you see such a beautiful human being come into the world. And it didn't. My life did not change at all. It was still all about me. I couldn't wait until I could get drunk again. My parents immediately bought me a car because they fell in love with the grandson. And Blair was doing so well. They bought me a car. I continued to work. When Ryan was a month old, my parents finally gave me the okay to go out that they would babysit, but I had to make sure he was in the bed and that I had to be home before he woke up. My first night out, I thought I could drink like I used to. I went to a bar downtown, passed out at the bar, and they tossed me out, got into a fight, got put in handcuffs, almost got arrested, but I cried and got my way out of it that I was a new mom and I couldn't go to jail. From that point on, the drinking was going right back to the same every chance I got. And then I'd hold my son in the morning like this and throw up in the toilet and hold the baby. And that's what I did, and that made sense to me. I managed to put myself into a business school. I'd come into the school every morning hungover. And the rules there is that if you missed a certain amount of days, you'd be kicked out of that class, like if you missed a certain amount of classes. And it was the English class, which was the first class. I got kicked out of it, and they said that I would fail unless I had to take a test. And if I got a 90 or an 85 or above, and I was like, I've never made anything that good before. How am I going to do this? Somehow I did it. So I was able to graduate from the school. Got a better job. I ended up moving out when Ryan was like 2 years old. Got an apartment in a government subsidized apartment. And I met people in that neighborhood who were willing to keep my son for me to go out and drink. And I literally would go out on Tuesday nights, Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights. And the people that I would leave my son with, I wouldn't even sit on their furniture in their home when I walked in there. But yet, they were good enough for me to leave my son with. I ended up at this time also trying to make a change in my life by converting to Baptist. I did not know that Baptists didn't drink during their communions. And the church that I joined was a Southern strict Baptist church. That I had joined, and they didn't believe in drinking alcohol at all, so I was going there on Sundays, hungover, every time, sitting in the back of the church, and why me? Why is my life so bad? Had no clue I was an alcoholic still, none. And I would sit in the back of the church, and when you go to get, I got saved, I got baptized, and I just knew that God was going to take care of me, because this is a different God than the Catholic God. This God forgave me for all my sins. And I would literally go up on this every Sunday and get saved. And the pastor's wife finally said, Blair, you don't have to come here every Sunday and get saved. And the shame, I left that church. It just wasn't working, that lifestyle. You know, I was a door knocker, too, by the way. I would go knock on people's doors hungover and try to talk to them about God. And it made sense to me. And that was pretty wild. But anyhow, life was not getting any better. I'm job hopping. I've moved to a better apartment in the West End. I'm making really good money, but I'm starting to not be able to show up again for work. I was working at a law firm, and Basil Sargent works there. I don't know if y'all even know who Basil is, but he's been in AA for a very, very long time. And he used to put these flyers on my desk, and they were for AA functions. Dances, and I'm like, what are you doing? And I just look at him, and he was old, so I was like, he's just a little cuckoo, you know, and I'm just like, okay, Basil, sure, I'll come, yeah, right, and I was like, why is this man doing this? And so I was going to lunch on my lunch breaks drinking beer every day at work. I had to leave and go drink beer. I could not function. Also back up in the apartments, I had gotten into a relationship with really a nice guy this time, a really nice man, and he was very good to my son, very, very good and loving. He was picking him up from daycare. He was coming home, cooking dinner, doing homework with Ryan, because Ryan was in kindergarten by then. I couldn't do homework with Ryan. I was too selfish. I'd rather lay on the couch, drink a beer, watch TV, whatever, but I did not want to sit and do homework. Nobody sat and did homework with me when I was little, so why am I going to do this? And these are things that I swore up and down I would never do as a parent. The way that my parents raised me, I would never do it. But I was doing the exact same thing that they did to me. And anyhow, relationship, great as far as him with Ryan, giving him baths, putting him to bed. I treated him like dirt, absolute dirt. He left me because of my drinking, and he said, you're an alcoholic. What? And if anybody had ever said that to me before, I never heard it. That was the first time in my life I heard it. My brother had been in AA for 3 or 4 years by then, by the way, and I still hated him, and so I did not call him for help. I called Basil, and Basil took me to my first meeting in 2004, and I heard what the people were saying, and I was like, wow, maybe I am an alcoholic, you know. But God, I'm so young, and I'm single, and, you know, there's just no way that I'm ready for any of this. But I stuck to it. I got a sponsor, started going through the steps, but I always heard the ninth step promises. And when I read those and I heard them, I thought those things were supposed to happen immediately. I didn't realize that it was ninth step promises. That's when you will know a new freedom and a new happiness. I didn't know I had to do all that work to get to that point. So 5 months I was extremely dry. I didn't listen to anything my sponsor told me. I wasn't staying after meetings and fellowshipping because I thought that nobody wanted to be around me. I really believed I was a disgusting person. What do these people want with me? Why would they even speak to me? I would go to the meeting right before it started, and I would leave as soon as it was over with. I wasn't one that ran out before the prayer. I did the prayer because I wanted to pray. But I just did not want a fellowship. I did not want anything to do with anyone. So I never did anything my sponsor told me to do. So needless to say, on July 3rd of 2004, a friend of mine had a non-alcoholic wedding because of me. And I was in her wedding. I was one of the bridesmaids. The type of person I am, I got so overwhelmed with being in a wedding atmosphere. People were dancing, having a good time, and I wasn't drinking, and I did not know how to dance or have a good time without dancing, I mean without drinking. So I left her wedding in the middle of it and went to the bar and got drunk. And this was a girl who did this for me, and I got drunk. And my drinking automatically, and I had all these plans. I was like, I know how to do it. I've learned all this in AA on how to drink, not to mix this, not to mix that. I'm just going to drink beer. And I'll never mix it with liquor again. So I went and I told this girl, Kim, that I was friends with. I said, you know, I'm only going to drink 3 beers tonight. So I went up to Kim at the end and aren't you proud of me? I only had 3 beers. She didn't see the other 4 or 5 that I was sneaking at the bar because there was no way in heck that I could drink only 3 beers. The liquor started up immediately afterwards, blacking out all over again, falling out of cars, creating very bad scenes, very, very bad scenes. I had to duck from the cops, almost got arrested. And I'm, at this time, 26, 27, and I'm a mom. What kind of mom acts that way? That is not normal. But I knew from being in the AA meetings that I was an alcoholic, but I was not ready to fully admit it and to do the work to make my life get better. So after that, let's see. The drinking just got worse and worse and worse, and I lost Kim, my only friend I had left. She was the only girl who would party with me. She was gone. She said, don't want anything to do with you. I went into, now let me tell you, I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with Richmond, but there's a bar in Mechanicsville called Midway. And if you get kicked out of Midway, there's something wrong, because this is the trashiest bar that there is, and that's what the bar I loved, because I fit in there. I mean, I really felt a part of it. And when I used to walk into Midway, I went there for 2 years straight, and when I used to walk in there, they would say, oh, Lord, here comes trouble. And I thought it was funny. I really did. The bartender, he knew exactly what I wanted. And let me tell you something else, though. When I was in AA in 2004, the one thing I did wrong is I tried to hold on to the old friends and the old places to go, and I would still go into Midway and try to go and only drink water. It got to a point where I was drinking. One of my drinks was cranberry and vodka. I would drink cranberry juice and have them mix it with water so that it at least looked like I was still drinking and I could feel it. But it didn't work. It did not work. And I started saying, well, maybe I can accidentally pick up a drink off the bar and say it was a mistake. And that way I won't have to pick up a white chip because it was an accident. But what am I doing in a bar? I had no business being in a bar. And so I did relapse, of course, and like I said, the drinking got worse and worse and worse and worse, and it got to a point when I went up to Midway one night, I went to walk in the door, and they said, you can't come in here, and I was like, whatever, I thought they were joking, because, you know, and they said, no, we're serious, and I was like, why? And they were like, Blair, if you don't know what you did last week or whatever, you have no business drinking. You have no business. To this day, I don't know what I did. I don't want to know what I did. I've been in fights, gone out there, shirts ripped in half, never got kicked out of this bar. That's why I said, if you can get kicked out of Midway, you must have done something really, really bad. I don't want to know what I did. I really don't. So, that was in January of 2005. And where I was working at this new job, my boss happens to be, the boss at the time happened to be a member of AA as well. I don't know how I always landed these jobs where people were in AA, but he knew I was in the program from before, and he knew I'd gone back out. And one morning I called him and his wife, and I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I said, but I want to die. I really want to die. And I said, I just can't This was in November. I'm sorry, I'm getting all mixed up. That was in November of 2004. I was still drinking. And I was like, I just want to die. I don't want to live. I said, I went out last night and I prayed. I'm a chicken. I won't commit suicide. I'm a chicken. But my prayers would be while I was driving drunk. Please, God, let something go out in the middle of the road so I can die. Let me accidentally run off the road because I couldn't do it myself. I'm too selfish and I'm too chicken to do it. And I called Tom the next morning because I was supposed to be at work. And plus, he had told me that if my drinking affected my job, he'd fire me. So I had to come up with something really good. So I told him I wanted to die and that I didn't want to live anymore and I didn't know what was wrong with me. He came over. He took me to St. Mary's and they took me in. So I ended up in St. Mary's and they made me go to an AA meeting there. And I was like, oh, no, I've been there. I've done that. I'm not going through this again. You people don't understand. It's not the alcohol. Y'all have to figure out what's really wrong with me. And so they gave me some really good drugs, really, really feel-good drugs. And when I came out, I had to go follow up with this lady. And when I went for my follow-up, she said to me, you know, you have a drinking problem. And she said, and while you're under my care and you're taking these meds, you cannot drink. And I said, well, I guess you're fired because you're the last person who's going to ever tell me I have a drinking problem ever again. And I don't want your meds because I'm going to drink. Walked out, kept drinking. January 2004, by then I had lost the only friend I had left, and I'm laying on the couch, and I'm absolutely miserable. Absolutely depressed. Didn't want to drink ever again. I gave in. I said, this is it. I'm really an alcoholic. There's really something wrong with me. And so I sat on the couch for about a month in misery, and February 25th, I called my brother and said, can you take me to an AA meeting? Well, he took me to Jay Walker's. And as soon as I got there and got out of the car, he dragged me over to this blonde-headed girl named Marcy and said, Marcy, this is my sister, and you're going to fix her, right? And walked away and left me standing there to Marcy. And I'm like this, and Jay Walker's is a big crowd of people, and I'm like, and all these people started coming up to me, and they're trying to hug me, and I'm like, no, we're not going through this again. I don't want this. And she became my sponsor, and she said, are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? And I said, yes, I'm done. And needless to say, when I went home that night after picking up a white chip, I said, well, if I'm going to commit to AA, I'm going to go get drunk one last time, and I'm going to make sure I drink so much that I never want to drink again. So I went out, and I drank 5 pitchers of beer all by myself. I refused to share it with anyone. This was my beer. Nobody was going to touch it because it was the last time I was ever drinking again. Ended up hitting the liquor once again. The next morning, the walk of shame. I had done something horrible all over again and felt 100 times worse about myself. So that was my last drink. And anyhow, Marcy said, are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? And I said, yes. She said, you'll have 3 committed meetings, you'll get a home group, and you'll be at my house on Sundays at 8 a.m. I think it was 8. I was like, okay, I can do the 3 meetings, I can do the home group, but I can't be at your house that early. Sundays is the only day that I get to sleep in, and you want me to be there. Yes. Well, I was there every Sunday morning, and she said that right now I don't have to be there until 10 or 11, and we don't meet every Sunday anymore. But she said it was because she didn't think that I was really willing. She didn't think I was done drinking, and she wanted to see how willing I was. And I did show up because I was done. And it wasn't a major bad thing that had happened. It was just I was done. I didn't have that bottom of, you know, in the hospital again or anything like that. It was just I was done. I didn't want it anymore. And I wanted that life. And people at Jay Walker's gave me hope because they were all laughing and smiling. And for once, I didn't say something's wrong with them. I want what they have. And for months going into the meetings, I would sit back and, God, I can't wait till the day that I'm like that. I can't wait. And now when I go into meetings and I've gone through my steps, I'm talking with newcomers. I've sponsored one girl, and I really wasn't her sponsor, but I was her sponsor because she just didn't call me her sponsor, but I'm the only one who worked with her. So I did have an opportunity to do that with a girl. I'm standing here. And that's a miracle that I'm standing up here talking to people and looking at people in the face because that's not me. That's not who I am. I love my home group. I love going to my meetings. I have met some of the most wonderful people in AA. My brother and I are like best friends. Best of friends. And, I mean, we talk on the phone. I'm house-sitting his dog, or pet-sitting his dog right now, and I almost killed it this weekend, but that was a different story. But it was an accident. But, I mean, he trusts me with his things, and he's been sober for 5 years. And my parents, I'm living with them, which is amazing, and they haven't threatened to kick me out yet. They have not asked me to leave. I have lost a job within the past month. I lost a boyfriend, which I had no business getting involved with, and I did that because I wanted to play God after I got my 1 year, because I thought because I had my year and I had my steps down pat, that I deserved to have the boyfriend. And but what it was is I was going through the steps and doing everything right with the wrong expectations, and it landed in a bad relationship once again. And so, anyhow, I'm not drinking, and that's amazing because no job, no money, no boyfriend. Those are all reasons for me to drink, and I'm not drinking, and it's because I have a choice today. You know, I can drink and be unhappy and miserable and probably die, and I may not die of, you know, drinking and actually killing me from the inside. I would die from misery and have no life. And the dancing, when I said that I would never be able to dance sober, we've had 2 dances so far that I've attended, and let me tell you, I was dancing my little butt off. I can't dance. I'm tone deaf. Can't dance. Tripping up over my own feet, you would have thought I was drunk. But I had the best time of my life. That's never. A year ago? Not even a year ago. 6 months ago, I didn't believe I could do that. I did not believe it. A good friend, and what is awesome is I heard someone say in a story, I know I'm running out of time, I heard someone say in a story before, in sharing in a meeting, that they say usually 1 out of every 3 only make it in sobriety, 1 out of every 3. And it scared me to death. And I have a little group of friends that all came in the same time. We're all in the same couple months. And it's a group of 5. We all made it. And we made it past that year, and we're still in this program, and we're still just as close. And it scared me. It scared me to death, and we're all here. And Ryan, my son, he makes straight A's. Great student. We sit and do homework at night. He doesn't need to study. And sometimes I get bored studying with him because there's no point. He's that smart. He's going to be going into he's in second grade now, so next year he'll go into the gifted and talented program. My kid. That's amazing that he's going to, you know, and he is that smart. His teachers, I mean, he's on a 7th grade reading level in the 2nd grade. How amazing is that? I am ADD, and I can't even read a page and remember it. And I go to baseball games. We do things together. We just went to Lake Gaston last weekend, the family, this is the great part with the amends. This is the great part. The family that I walked out on that I told y'all that were so good to me, I made an amends to them a few months back, face-to-face, found them in Lake Gaston. They had moved there when they retired. And now my son and I are welcome there. Anytime we want to come, open door, don't have to call, can just show up. And when we got there, the whole family, their son who's my age, who I think he's still a little resentful against me for what I did to his family, but the way he treated my son like his own son. He has a beautiful family himself now. And just really, it was unbelievable how they hugged me. We love you. We're so proud of you. This is all we ever wanted, was for you to turn your life around. And the amends have been awesome that I've made. I've only had one person, Kim, who will not talk to me. The people I stole from in the houses I lived in. And when I say stole, I didn't steal their belongings, but I stole money because I'd run up their phone bills, call them long distance, to $300 and $400, and then I'd leave right before the phone bill came so I wouldn't have to deal with them. I'm paying those back, and I made amends to them face-to-face, and those families have also welcomed me back into their homes. And it's been amazing. It has been absolutely amazing how my life has changed so much, and I go through hard times. It ain't easy, and my grand sponsor will say sobriety's not for the P word, and it's not. It's really not for me. And I thought I was always one of those wimps, and I'm running out of things to say, but I am just so grateful for this program, and I'm grateful that you asked me to come speak, Thank you very much, and it is an honor and a privilege. Thank you.